This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
This episode of Heroes of the Horn is brought to you by Melissa of House Glukowski. It shames me to admit it, but I will take him any way I can get him. Welcome to Heroes of the Horn, a Wheel of Time podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I am Sir Ezra. Welcome to our Wheel of Time book club. The horn has sounded, and we have answered the call. Today we are covering The Fires of Heaven, Part 7, Chapters 48 through 51.
Ez, my friend, this is our first back to sort of basic podcast here, since we did one that was a live stream on YouTube. It was a lot of fun. Because we were just talking about the trailer. So now that we're kind of back in form here, going to be talking about the books. There's probably a lot of people maybe who, I don't know, didn't listen to that or are coming here. A lot of new people trying to check this out. So I guess we should, I think we should kind of reintroduce a little bit here what it is we do, since we obviously, since I know we have a lot of new people checking us out. So this is, we're a Wheel of Time podcast. We are going through the books. We will obviously be covering the show when it comes out. It is my first read of the series. So everything is, we're non-spoilers up to where we're at. And Ezra has read the series how many times?
I'd say at least, you know, two full reads. I stretch it to three sometimes, but it depends. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a ton of fun. So right now we're into The Fires of Heaven, which is book five of the Wheel of Time, and we've got plenty more books to go, my friend.
Yeah, we do. And it has been a ride already. It's an adventure. I love talking with our patrons and our folks who, you know, are following along with us. And some of them, it's their first time. Some are looking for, you know, just that to re-experience what it was like to read the series again. And so through Matt, we get that, just some of that live reaction. And it's a lot of fun. So yes, non-spoilers. Now, if you go to the YouTube page, we do, since we are now up through book five, there are spoilers there up through book five, essentially. So that does happen. And we are adding back in a segment in our village council where we're going to be kind of explaining the Wheel of Time, picking like a topic. Could be Tirang Rial, it could be Aes Sedai, it could be a specific Aja or a location, and just kind of talking about it in general. And I think it's a cool thing, one, for us to, you know, we make YouTube videos out of those. And then it's just re-explaining and bringing back old material, rehashing it, and remembering where it fits into the story. Because in the spoiler edition, by the way, friends, Sir Ezra now has started the spoiler edition. I'm calling it A Memory of Spoilers. And that is there for you on Apple Premium. It's also over on Patreon. I will do one after this episode. I don't even know which character it will be, but I'm going to pick one. And I'm just going to go off the cuff. We pull up the wiki and we just roll with that. Sometimes we do something more specific, more researched, if you will. But those are a lot of fun. And that has been good for me because it's kind of stretching me as a reader, because I got to keep ahead. I got to remember where we're going, what we're seeing. And it's a lot. 14 books is a lot, man.
Hey, man, it is a lot of books, but it's an absolute ton of fun. So, all right, as well, before we, you know, get going here, we do have, you know, some things to say here, you know, and typically we try to make some jokes about this. And as who would you say, if you had to pick one character who you think really could benefit from the product we're about to talk about?
Well, I would say, especially if you guys watch the most recent Wheel of Time trailer, you will know that this little tool that we're about to describe could be used by the one and only Loghain. He looked ridiculous in that trailer. I mean, unrecognizable. If you know the actor, like, he looked unrecognizable, and he could definitely use this product, my friend.
That's true, man, because we, you know, attention to all of our listeners, okay, whether you're here in Randland or across the galaxy, my friends, all the way from Australia to Houston, do we have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job. From the leaders in male grooming, join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20.
Matt, there's actually also a product in here called the Crop Preserver, which I've talked about a lot, like the ball deodorant. And I just thought about this at the beginning of Eye of the World. They're out there on the land, man. They're on the land. They are running away, but they need their crops preserved because the weather is bad and they are after Nynaeve like crazy. So, you know, maybe some folks in Emmonsfield could have used the Crop Preserver.
Absolutely, my friends. Hey, make sure to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com for a clean trinity and beyond. Your space balls will thank you. So we're going to be taking another look at the trailer a little bit here.
Yeah.
Talking about the series itself. And kind of also, I think, explaining a little bit about what is the Wheel of Time for a lot of the new people here. Because I think you know, the trailer, it looked cool. You and I enjoyed it. But I don't know necessarily if it did actually a really great job of explaining kind of what this series is about. I mean, it is a teaser trailer. So it's just sort of grab people's attention. Hey, this looks cool. There might be a more full trailer coming. But you and I noticed some things in there that I was like, wow, you know, if your only look into Wheel of Time is this trailer, you would have some misconceptions about the series.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's, it was for the fans, and it was not necessarily, it talked, the main focus was the One Power. And we'll talk about the One Power in a second as maybe our next topic or Wheel of Time explained subject. But in this, it's very important to point out that this is about the Wheel of Time. And so if you want to know what the setting of this story is, it is kind of the cyclical battle between the forces of light and darkness. And you have an order, this group known as the Aes Sedai, who can use this one power to channel for the betterment of the world, and they can tap into that source. But it is set in, we call it Randland. There really is no like specific name for the continent necessarily, but we start the story in a place called the Two Rivers Emmonsfield, and you have a mysterious individual, several show up into this town, and one of them is the Aes Sedai Moraine, and Moraine can wield the one power. Comes in there and she's looking for an individual. She's trying to find someone. I don't know how far we go with this, but like, she's looking for a particular person who will fulfill a prophecy. We'll put it like that. Who's going to fulfill some sort of prophecy. And this is just a never ending thing. So there's these different ages, and it's, they didn't even explain much of that, right? There are neither beginnings nor are there endings to the turning of the wheel of time. That might have been one line in there, but you, if you look at the trail, you see a lot of circles. You'll see the Aes Sedai ring is a circle, and these things come time and time again, the turning of the wheel of time. And it's this fight with the Dark One that happens. And you have a chosen one who is picked by the pattern, and they are then sent to kind of fight the Dark One, and they will fight there in the last battle.
And you know, the trailer itself also made it seem like a character, Loghain, right, is the Dark One.
Yes, it did. Yeah, right.
Which I found interesting.
Right. Yes. Yeah, at the start of the story, we just know, we know that he is he's named a false dragon. Okay, start of the story, he's called a false dragon, and there's a war in Ghiladon, and there's rumors of this, and the Red Aja are moving against him. So, what does that mean? Is he the Dark One? Is he not? I don't know where we're gonna go to all the spoilers, because I know what the show's trying to do and what the trailer's trying to do. It's trying to set you up to see that guy is really bad. Person, right? Bad, right. You know, but is he the Dark One? That's the big question. So that's something we can let folks kind of figure out for themselves, I guess, in the show. But just going into it, knowing that there is a battle of light versus dark, and right now in this world, women can channel the One Power. It's known by many different names around the world, but in the book, and I'm sure in the show, it will be known as Saidar, and it's one half of the One Power. The women can channel it and men can channel it. The women right now, currently in the story we're going to start with, they are the only ones who can channel it and not go crazy or mad or cause mass destruction. And the men, when they channel, they become crazed and destroy tons of things. So,
yeah,
I think that kind of helps, because people were a little critical of, like, well, the trailer is just trying to get people to buy into it, and it doesn't necessarily, it's going to explain to you the fears of a male channeler and what's wrong with someone channeling the One Power if you're a man, and how bad that is and how evil and wrong, and just, I mean, all the wordplay around male right. channelers will be negative in connotation.
Yeah. And we'll come to understand that there might be a few more male channelers out there, my friend.
And
that's kind of, but I think that's sort of a great explanation. It's just kind of intro to the series, what it's about. Great cast of characters, as you progress forward.
Yeah. Yep. It's epic. And by the way, too, if you're diving in now and you just clicked on the podcast and you're wanting to dive into the series, Matt, so far your experience has been, it's a pretty easy read, right? It's not.
Yeah. I mean, especially compared to other things, which we read, cause we also run, you know, a Game of Thrones podcast and stuff like that. I would say that even the reading level is less than something like that. The first book, a lot of people consider to be one of the greatest fantasy books ever written.
Yeah.
Which I think is why, I'd certainly argue that the second book is like, once you get to the end of the second book, you're like, I'm in, I don't care how many books are left.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. It's that good.
And from what we can tell, season one of the show is going to pull from books 1 through 3 in kind of different ways.
Yeah, and that was interesting. I do want to raise one question, I guess, to folks who watch the trailer, and maybe you're familiar with the series, you're a veteran of it. I don't know, we're not going to entertain, we're going to be saying spoilers on the main show. We'll save that for like YouTube content. But when you look at that trailer, there was somebody, Matt was looking at a guy in a cage with full of arrows. And I thought, who is this and where is this at? So when you start to think, which book are we pulling stuff from, it makes you, you know, stretch. When Rafe says it could be coming from the Dragon Reborn, well, now I'm thinking about things that happened there that we could see Rand go through, you know, right. Encounters with Dark Friends and such, and we still Loial. You're looking at the Ways or the Waygate or whatever it is. Loial's nowhere. Unless he's one of the writers, I don't
Loial's
see
not in the, Loial's not in the trailer.
Yeah,
like, I can tell. There are a handful of characters who weren't in the trailer.
Yeah.
Didn't see Loial, didn't see Min. A lot of people are complaining. I didn't see Bella. So
wow. I didn't even pay, we have to go back and look. I didn't jump out at me.
Okay. All right, Ez. Well, should we dive in? Just go ahead and get started here with the episode.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are covering today chapters 48 through 51 of the Dragon Reborn, Fires of Heaven.
Yeah.
So chapter 48, Leave Takings, chapter 49 to Boanda, chapter 50 to Teach and Learn, and chapter 51, News Comes to Kyrian. And wow, things are heating up here as we enter the home stretch here.
Yes, they are.
Of the fires of heaven. So chapter 48, Leave Takings. Nynaeve is in her wagon packing her belongings after changing from her circus costume into a plain gray woolen dress. She packs the twisted stone ring, Land's signet ring, and her gold serpent ring, the gems Amathera gave to her, some pouches of herbs and a small mortar and pestle to prepare them, and finally the letters of rites and three of the six purses. She takes one of the letters that authorizes the bearer to do whatever she wishes in the name of the Ammerlin. She decides to leave the Adam in the box containing the other Dreamworld Terror Angreal to Elaine. She also packs most of her clothes, but regrets having to leave some behind. She uses Luca's red dress to pack the Dark One's seal. She can't bring herself to touch it because of the evil coming from it. Elaine comes in looking upset. She packs the Adam, Brigitte's silver arrow, and the other two Dreamworld Terror Angreal, and the rest of the money. Elaine also manages to pack all of her clothes and belongings, leaving almost nothing behind. The tension is high between Elaine and Nynaeve. Outside, the men have already packed everything and they are ready to go. Brigitte is outside, also ready to go. The people from the circus come to wish them all goodbye. Some offer to escort them to the city, but they are relieved when their offer is denied. Luca gives Nynaeve flowers and professes his undying love for her, embarrassing her and making her furious at both him and Lan. The group head out for Samara with Galad leading, flanked by Tom and Julin and the Shianarans in a long file to either side. The women walk in the middle. The men are all very nervous and keep fiddling with their weapons. However, the walk of the town is uneventful. When they reach Samara, they are greeted by the sight of burning houses, corpses hanging from various places, and bodies on the ground. The only sounds are glass shards breaking under their feet and the buzz of the faraway mobs. The group runs into one of the mobs and has to fight their way back to the docks, but the men manage to hold the mob, but it is Galad who finally breaks through them. Tom, Julin, and most of the Shianarans are wounded. Galad is untouched when they reach the docks. Galad speaks to the White Cloaks, and they let the group in. A small crowd is huddled near the docks under white cloaked guards, nearly a dozen men, old, ragged, and bruised, and twice as many women. Most of the children are babies. The sight wrenches Nynaeve's heart. She makes the captain, Nerys, agree to take them on his ship as well. Galad tells Nynaeve and Elaine that he is only paid for half of the travel costs, because Captain Nerys overcharged the traveling fee and he doesn't have enough money to pay for the rest. Nynaeve thanks Galad for his efforts. She still can't understand how he could have started a war in Samara to keep a promise. Galad tells Nynaeve and Elaine to stay away from Rand. Nynaeve wonders if Galad suspected that they have no intention of going to Camelin, but dismisses the idea. So we did already cover this in last time's extended edition, I think a little more extensively than we'll probably cover it here today. But that's sort of the summary of where we're at. The two big takeaways from this chapter are Luca, you know, yeah, like professing his undying love to Nynaeve, and I'll do anything. I don't care who this Land guy is. Well, good luck with that one, buddy.
Yeah, that sounds like a Peter Baelish situation with Catelyn Tully in a Game of Thrones. Like, not a good idea to challenge someone like Land. He doesn't know Land, obviously, but I mean, it's funny, but at the same time, hey, that takes a lot of. He approached a beautiful woman. He wanted to. He likes Nynaeve. Whatever, you know. Valen is. He's a showman. He's an entertainer. And I also think part of it might be too. We're on the run. We're leaving, and they've always been kind of this tag along attached group. And they might be, you know, leaving him as well. So now's your chance. Confess your love. Try to get her to stay. Yeah, right. Valen.
Yeah, yeah. So then the other part is kind of a Galad, man. I mean, he gets, attacking the city just so they can get them out of there, causing all this disruption, everything that's going on. But he can't pay for their whole trip. So that's going to be interesting to see where that goes. And then he says, stay away from Rand.
Yeah.
And as we'll get to, man, we'll notice, hey, there's a lot of war breaking out right now.
Yes, there is. There is a lot of war breaking out in various parts of Randland or the Westlands or whatever. And it's not good. This one, though, didn't maybe need to happen. There was already a lot of tension because of the Prophet and so on. And I covered the Prophet in my spoiler edition, as well as one of the Forsaken in the spoiler edition as well. So if you guys want that, go check that out. But Galad is, as we said in the extended edition, he is chaotic. Chaotic good, and he felt like this was the right thing to do, and so he would start a war to do it. It doesn't matter the cost. For him, it's important that he protects his sister. Number one, gets her out of there, sends her away. I kind of think maybe he does know where they're going, but to him, he has to do what's right and put her in the position to make the right choices, and he's just like, I'm going to do what I think is best and what's right, and hope that they do return to Camelin and go where they're supposed to go and stay away from Rand. That's his advice. But I think he does, a part of him must know, right? He wouldn't say that if there wasn't a part of him thinking, hey, you know, they're probably not going to go where I'm sending them. But
right,
I helped him and I did what I thought was right and got him on a ship. So Galad is an interesting character.
He is an interesting character. Well, I think Galad should stay away from Rand. So if he knows what's best for him.
Yeah,
next to Rand is Matt, and the last time I remember Matt and Galad meeting, Matt whipped him.
So by the light, he did. Yes, he did.
Yeah,
blood and ashes. He did, my friend. He he whipped him up.
He whipped him and Gawain, and he was like, he had like just woken up from basically like a 4-month drunken stupor. Exactly. So
I remember he was eating all that food, trying to put on weight again, and he was just malnourished and everything. So yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. So we did cover that in our extended edition last time. So now we'll move on to chapter 49 here, to Boanda. Right. So Nynaeve pays Nerys for the money for the extra passengers. The refugees are grateful for her paying their passage, but she's embarrassed by their gratitude. Captain Nerys leaves his cabin to Nynaeve and Elaine, Tom, Julin, and Uno. They've seemed to have persuaded him. To do so. The boat is terribly crowded because of the refugees. Elaine voices her suspicion that Captain Nerys is a smuggler because he only wanted to travel by night. Elaine and Nynaeve blackmail him into emptying his hold so that the refugees have a place to stay. Nynaeve contemplates about Nerys' dislike of women. He seems to think that they only cause trouble. Tom, Julin, and Uno start tormenting Nerys with darkly smiling comments about cracking heads and slitting throats. Nynaeve wants to give them a tongue lashing, but cannot because she never gets them alone. Nynaeve finds out that Elaine channeled favorable winds. At first, she's mad that Elaine channeled without asking her. First of all, come on. Who put you in charge? I guess is the last time I checked. Nynaeve, isn't Elaine, you know, like royalty?
True that. I mean, yes, true. True. And actually, yes. And Nynaeve would be one of her technically subjects, right? From Andor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Without asking her.
Yeah.
Elaine argues that Samara is far enough behind them and that Mogadine, I don't know. They seem to go back and forth on the way they pronounce it. They do. I think it's Mogadine, because there's no Didion in there. So Mogadine, that's what I meant to say, could not have located where the channeling came from. Nynaeve is relieved that the trip on the boat will be shortened by Elaine's channeling, but she has trouble admitting it. The two of them fight with smiling faces so as not to raise suspicion. Brigitte has to threaten them to make them stop. The men on board think that they must be happy to have left Samara. The women, however, seem to realize that the masquerade and stay clear of the three. Day by day, the atmosphere becomes more friendly. Nynaeve starts healing people. She tries to hide the fact that she channels by using herbs and ointments. Elaine and Brigitte follow her example and start playing and having fun with the refugees' children. Elaine continues to study the Adam in the privacy of her cabin. The refugees tell stories, and Nynaeve and Elaine let a coin slip here and there. The men seem to have lost hope over what happened to them, but Nynaeve admires the women. They have lost as much as the men, but having children does not allow them to lose hope. Nynaeve becomes fond of the three women, especially because all of them remind her of a certain aspect of her own life. Nicola had been engaged, but Hyrin, her fiance, became a dragonsworn following the prophet until he was killed. She wanted to get as far away from the prophet as she could. Mirrigan was a mother of two, Gerald and Seve, who had been dealing in cures and herbs, which was a dangerous business because so close to Amadicia and the White Cloaks. She had to flee, and had she healed a man from a fever, and people started to say that she had brought him back from the dead. Arianna had traveled to Ilion to keep her younger brother, Gwil, from taking the oath as a hunter of the horn. She ended up taking the oath herself, traveling the world in hope of finding her brother somewhere and bringing him back home. She had a hard time traveling, but didn't intend that to let that stop her. Brigitte learns that Elaine is the daughter heir of Andor. Elaine and Brigitte wash the black dye out of her hair. After seeing Brigitte's blonde braid, Nerys mutters something about Brigitte stepping out of the bloody stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whenever Nerys looks longingly at a place where he could stop and hide during the day, Nynaeve mentions how glad he must be to soon get the people from Samara off his boat. When the boat reaches Bwanda, most of the Samarans leave the River Serpent. Nicola, Morrigan, and Arianna want to keep traveling with Nynaeve. Elaine and Brigitte agree. Nynaeve convinces Nerys to take them as far as Saldar. He has to accept Nynaeve's conditions since he needs to avoid dealing with the authorities in Bwanda, since they need to travel south anyway. Nynaeve remembers a trip to Teleron Riad during their first night of the River Serpent. She stood in the heart of the stone in Tyr, calling Egwene's name, terrified to death that Mogadin might be there or might be watching her. When she comes back to the waking world, she breaks down and cries, feeling like a coward. Elaine and Brigitte try to convince her that she's not a coward, and Elaine and Nynaeve go back to Teleron Riad. They start at the Stone of Tyr, go to the Royal Palace in Caemlyn, to Emmons Field, and to Elida's study in the White Tower. Nynaeve sees the changes in Emmons Field and wonders what the banners and the new buildings mean. Going through the documents on Elida's and the Keeper's Table, they learn that Elida knows Rand has crossed the Dragon Wall into Kyrian and other things that are of no immediate importance. They return. Nynaeve is glad that she went back to the World of Dreams, almost forgetting about her fears. They take more trips and practice control in the World of Dreams. They meet with Egwene and Amys. Egwene tells them everything that has happened since the last time they saw each other. She even tells them the things that she had told them before, when she had been talking to Elaine and Nynaeve in their dreams, and when the Wise Ones had forbidden her to dreamwalk so as to not let Amys know that she had disobeyed the Wise One. Egwene and Amys report that what Rand has been up to. Egwene asks whether Nynaeve and the others are still with Valen Luca. They tell their story. Egwene hints at meeting the two in Shiriam's studies afterwards. When Egwene sees Nynaeve and Elaine there, she furiously tells them not to reveal her secret visits to Teleron Riad. After 5 days of travel, they reach a beach close to Saidar. Nothing along the shore hints the village existing nearby. The small party starts their way inland.
Yeah, so let me say something real quick right at the end of that chapter. Egwene, calm down. All right, you're breaking the rules. You're breaking the rules, okay? So I just love, there's all this bickering back and forth, and Nynaeve is, you know, scolding Elaine about the Tom situation. Then Elaine is, you know, getting on Nynaeve for the money stuff with Valen Luca, and then what was happening with the menagerie. And then there's the whole Nynaeve makes a big mistake with Mogadin. And then this whole Teleron Riad thing, where there's this power struggle between her and Egwene, is happening, where Egwene is trying to say, I'm not that little girl anymore, and you need to kind of have more respect for me, etc. But then Egwene is also disobeying those who are trying to tutor and train her. And by the way, they are all pretending to be Aes Sedai, and they're not, Matt. Okay, they're all trying to pretend that they are something that, that they are not. And I'll never forget when Rand starts to wear that like coat and Moraine puts this coat on him, right? And he's supposed to be this High Lord. And he goes to Kyrian and everyone is thinking he's playing Deus Damar. And, yes. and he's not, right? You know, and everyone's, the women are like looking at him as if, almost like he's getting a bigger head and he's full of himself and he's thinking about, you know, I don't know. It's kind of like when Harry Potter says the whole quote where Hermione's like, she's only into you because you're the chosen one. And he's like, well, I am the chosen one, right? You know,
but I am the chosen
one. Right. Yeah. It's like Rand, I think the girls, especially Egwene, has a couple, you know, moments with him early on in the series where you can kind of feel that type of tension. And then now they're out here pretending to be Aes Sedai. Like Moraine has to put Egwene in check a couple times, like remember your place. And for now this works that you're pretending to be full Aes Sedai, but they're not. So just keep that in mind. They're also Nynaeve and Elaine are about to show up into Salidar and they're going to have a little rude awakening, my friend. I mean, like they're going back to the full Aes Sedai, to the White Tower, if you will, the Blue Aja.
Right.
So,
yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's all interesting too. Plus, I mean, a lot of stuff, that's a big chapter too.
Huge.
Yeah. I mean, Brigitte, like, hey, stepping out of the stories.
Right. Yes, exactly. And so like they've been undercover with the hair dye and all this kind of stuff. Secret identities are revealed and that Elaine is, you know, coming forward and, you know, fessing up that she is royalty, as you said. And now people are looking at Brigitte saying, who is this? She looks just like what we've heard about in the stories. And she's also really good with a bow and what, you know,
right.
It's in your face.
Exactly. Yeah. How do you explain that to people? Oh, well, she's this like ancient hero. Yeah. No big deal.
Yeah. I think you know, the thing you would do is basically say you're trying to emulate a legend, right? You want to right. be her, you know, type of thing.
Right.
So,
well, especially since you have people who are, you have a Hunter of the Horn there. You know, yeah. on the ship that they're meeting. Well, I do like that we get a little bit of this where they're kind of talking to all just sort of these characters that and it's just some good world building here where you're just talking about all these different people. And because, you know, so often you're just focusing on your main characters like Ariana, right, who travels right to stop her brother from taking the Hunter of the Horn. She takes it herself. She has to go search for people. So I think that's kind of cool that you get a little bit of this chapter, just seeing the stories of some more just sort of random people in the world.
Yeah. Another thing it does as well, they hinted at Nynaeve passing out a few coins and that they're trying to take care of the women, the children, and the men have sort of lost their way. She's worried about the men as well, too, because they need a purpose and she doesn't have enough coin for them. You know, she now is starting to feel responsible for taking care of a larger group of people and that they're looking to her to be like a leader and help and things like that. And so anyway, kind of cool. And she does gravitate towards these three women who she's going to take to Salidar with her. So.
Right. Well, I've got a purpose for all these men. There's a man named Randall Thor.
Wow.
Okay. And he needs able-bodied men willing to fight. Okay?
Yes, he does.
For the light.
For the light. Yes. Oh, God.
Okay, here we go. Chapter 50, To Teach to Learn. So we're still with Nynaeve. A lot of characters in this one here. So they arrive in Salidar. Their arrival is not as they expected it to be. Nynaeve and Elaine thought they would be welcomed as heroes after they went through defeating the Black Aja twice, but they are harshly interrogated by six Aes Sedai. Shiriam, Morvine, Morella, Carlina, Anaya, and Bowen. They tell their story they had agreed on telling and managed to keep most of their secrets. They hide details about their encounter with Mogadine, and they also managed to keep the secret of Brigitte's real identity. Additionally, the Aes Sedai don't find out that Nynaeve and Elaine had been posing as full sisters. Nynaeve is surprised to that Swan and Leanne are alive. She senses a chill between the two women. She is also aware of them being still. She feels the lack of something and describes it as almost like a wound. She becomes curious and plans to find out whether the wound can be healed. Nynaeve also feels a lack of freedom. She finds it hard to readjust to others being in charge. When she jumps to please Shiriam, she realizes that their days of freedom are certainly gone. The Aes Sedai question them about Birgit's silver bow, the Adam, and most importantly about Talleyrand Riad and the dream Teron Grial. Swan is questioned as to why she gave a letter with her seal to accept it and why she sent them after the Black Aja. But the Aes Sedai are most intent on using the dream Teron Grial to spy on Eliaida and to contact Moraine through Egwene. Shiriam orders Nynaeve and Elaine to teach the Aes Sedai to, the use of the Teron Grial. Nynaeve fears that once they know how to use it, they would probably be taken away from them. The Aes Sedai agree that Nynaeve and Elaine left the tower by command and that they cannot be blamed for it. They are there to resume their studies. Before the interrogation is over, Bowen, how do you pronounce that one?
Bowen, I would say.
Brings the topic back to the seal on the Dark One's prison that was in Nynaeve and Elaine's possession. It is shattered, even though it is made of the Quillendir. Elaine says that they didn't take care of it because they didn't think they would have to, given the fact that it is indestructible. Anaya says that if her information is correct, three seals still hold. After the interrogation, Nynaeve goes to the common room where Tom, Julin, and Uno try to convince them to flee from Saladar. Nynaeve thinks about the advantages she would have being able to study with the Aes Sedai of the Yellow Aja, who are Therva Moresis, Niso Dachin, and Dagdara Finchi. Elaine also says that she would like to stay. She would like to stay there. The two of them urge Tom, Julin, and Uno to ride to Kyrian without them to help Rant. Suddenly, all three of them find reasons why they did like to stay in Saladar, obviously wanting to protect the girls. Birgit and Min play with Marigan's boys, Jarel and Sebe. Nynaeve and Elaine reassure Birgit that they were able to keep her secret. Two of Morel's warders, Crow Macon and Avar Hachami, are the only people in the common room not scurrying around the some errand. They seem to be in conversation, but they were probably assigned to watch the newcomers. Faelin comes in and orders Ariana and Nicola to be tested to see if they can channel. Swan and Leanne come out of the room where the interrogation had been held. Iciness still surrounds them, but Nynaeve sees a small flicker of sympathy. Swan joins the newcomers. Her face goes blank with Garth Bryn when Garth Bryn joins the small group. He asks Uno for help in training his army. He also talks to Tom. To Nynaeve, it sounds like riddles, but the readers understand that they talk about their past, and Tom assures Garth Bryn of his support as long as it doesn't tie him to the situation for too long. And Garth Bryn almost ignores Elaine. Swan takes Nynaeve to a room where she demands that Nynaeve also teaches her the use of the dream Teron Grial. If she doesn't, she will reveal that they have been posed as full sisters. Nynaeve doesn't want to be bullied. She threatens Swan to reveal that she and Leanne are not as hostile to each other as they pretend to be. Her hunch had been right. Their hostility is a masquerade. Nynaeve still agrees to teach Swan if she allows her to study Leanne's stilling and Loghain's gentling.
So
a lot of new characters. First of all, I cannot wait for the show. I mean, I know they say it in the audiobook, but it's like, the names are all over the place.
Half of these names aren't going to be mentioned in the show because ever there's
again.
So many.
And it's like, always like, who the heck are these people again?
So one that's tough is, and I was kind of laughing because I was going through here, and I just did, by the way, stick around for the spoiler edition, friends. I will be covering a couple of those characters that Matt, and I'm going to have to figure out how to freaking say their names too. Some of those other Aes Sedai I'll be talking about in the spoiler edition.
Quendiar.
Quendiar.
Quendiar. Which, well, it says Quain-Dear. Quain-Dear.
I know.
It's spelled C-U-E. It's spelled like Quillendir.
Wait. Let's do a, you.
I'm going to take it to Google. I'm going to take it to Google Pronounce and see what they say.
It's in Quindiar, and the audiobook is, again, that's why I listen to it so much, because sometimes I'm like, what? yeah, I had one of my former students reading the series, and it was funny just talking to them. I used to run a Dungeons and Dragons club, and a lot of them wanted to read, you know, high fantasy books, and so this is one I often recommended. And yeah, the pronunciations were all over the place. It's just, it's tough. So, what's it saying? What's Google Translate?
Hold on, I gotta get it. You know, anyway, hey, you can keep going.
Hey, while you're doing that, let me talk about Quendiar. All right. It's a material made by the one power that is considered unbreakable. Any force directed against it is said to make it only stronger, and even, ooh, the Shadow Rising. I love how they, I'm so glad they put references in here. The Shadow Rising Chapter 54. Thank God. Okay. And even Balefire will not destroy it. The making of it was lost in the breaking, and all examples date from the Age of Legends. Let's see. There was some knowledge of it during the breaking, however, as the, yeah, the Shadows of Heaven, the Adam, yeah, was also made. It was a form of Quendiar. Okay, cool. Interesting. Just it's made with the one power, indestructible. What's it say? What does Google say?
Nothing like the way.
Yeah. So it's also known as Heartstone, by the way, too. So you could call it Heartstone. That's a little easier.
Yeah. It's like Quendiar is what Quendiar.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a joke. I'm gonna start calling it calendar. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anywho. So I mean, there's a lot going on here. A lot of battle, a lot of positioning, a lot of battling. I mean, Siouan coming in acting like she still runs the show. Okay.
Well, let's go back to some early discussion we had in the series. Siouan at one point, and by the way, I love seeing her in the trailer. She looks awesome. She's going to be epic. It's really cool. But who sends a bunch of children? Children. I mean, I don't know how old they are exactly, but like, you know, young people, accepted novices at the time. Novices, two novices and one accepted. Or actually it was one novice and then one accepted, and then they just brought Elaine in on all of it. But after the Black Aja, what? She did that. Like, she kind of ropes them into this big quest and mission to take on the Black Aja. It's crazy. And so I just think it's wild that she's now back at it again. And she's going to have her bickerings with Nynaeve, but they each know something to kind of get what they want. Like, Nynaeve wants to study stilling and gentling, and Siouan needs a purpose and doesn't need the other full Aes Sedai members to know that she and Lianne are not being necessarily truthful, and they're bickering and they're arguing, that there's something going on between the two of them. They have their own kind of game that they're playing. So yeah, that is the gist of that dynamic, I guess. Right.
Right. Yeah. So
Gareth Bryn, real quick, that's cool, right? I mean, so he and Tom Marilyn are having that conversation about the past. It seems like it's in riddles. It's because they're trying to shy around this topic of when Tom was exiled, or his, you know, the queen called for his head, essentially, because a little romance went the wrong way.
Went sideways,
man. That's what happens. Heads roll, buddy. Like,
I know.
It's crazy.
I know. It's so interesting too. God, it's Gareth Bryn, you know, same thing. He's a little bit like Luca. Hey.
You know, he's there because of those eyes and Siouan, right? And then he's roped into training the men and possibly training up other individuals. He ropes Uno into helping train, and he's really there because he's after Siouan, right? I mean, he chased her after this oath, and it's crazy. It just, the strings, the pattern is pulling him in this direction, and Siouan is sort of what he's, you know, attached to, and it's
right. And then you've got Nynaeve here, and she's trying to learn about stilling and gentling. I mean,
stilling?
I mean, these aren't even full Aes Sedai yet, and they're out here trying to perform high level.
I know
use of the one power.
Yeah, I know, and it's interesting too. This is something no one likes to focus. It's something that Nynaeve felt, right? So she felt this when she approached Siouan and Lianne. She feels like there's a wound or a hurt or something there, and she wants to look into that more. And Swans a little bit, you know, they don't want to focus on it. They want to focus on what they need to do to keep preserving themselves and not lose sort of that will to live. Like, they want to find a purpose and a function inside of their society, inside of these Aes Sedai here at Salidar. So Nynaeve is going to investigate them and also teach others how to use the Tiran Greal. But yeah, there's something there. And so that's why the yellow Aja is being pushed her way. She's still accepted. She's not necessarily full Aes Sedai, and so she needs to study, and this is a part of that study, if you will. But people don't like to talk about it. It's not something that the Aes Sedai want to investigate much because it's a really awful thing. They don't, I think it makes them queasy to even think about the that one of them could be stilled or that this could be done to them with the power. It seems so awful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So next part of view. So there's still another piece of this chapter. So Elaine's point of view. So Elaine catches up with Min. They observe Leanne talking to a large, roughly dressed man who looks like a blacksmith. Min brings up that she has been she has had a viewing about Nicola, Arena, and Morrigan. She only saw that they bring trouble and can't define it any better. Elaine wants to talk about the viewing Min had about Rand and her and about Elaine having to share him. Min says that she'll have to share him with two. Min says that she'll have to share him with two others. She also admits that she is one of those two. Elaine is shocked. She admits that she doesn't like the thought of having to share him. So does Min, saying, Elaine, it shames me to admit it, but I will take him any way I can get him. However, they both agree that they like each other. They wonder who the third woman will be, and Elaine hopes that Avienda will take good care of him.
What are your thoughts, man? Tell me your the raw, unfiltered Sir Matt thoughts on this.
Well, then, you know, is kind of like, I mean, again, so, you know, unfortunately, this is one of the things I kind of knew going into into the series. Mm-hmm. But even if you were getting this for the first time, I think it's pretty obvious that Min has already said, hey, you know, she was holding him at the end of the Great Hunt. Obviously then Rand and Elaine sort of kiss. And Elaine is constantly taught, you know, brings him up quite often. Then, and well, we already saw Rand with Avienda earlier in this book. It's nothing that really sort of shocks me, I guess. But obviously, I'm just more sort of curious to see how this is even going to work. Like, how does this at all?
Well, that's great. let me say you're not the only one who's thought about it. Okay, Robert Jordan has thought about it as well. So he's.
And clearly, yeah.
He will tell you how it's going to work, my friend, which is crazy. You know, I saw an interview. Yeah, go ahead.
So, go ahead, because I'm going to take us down a totally different path. So.
Okay, just real quick then. I saw an interview at Once Upon a Time or heard it somewhere where Robert Jordan was asked about this topic and men's viewings and Rand and romances and relationships with Rand. And he just thinks it's kind of funny. He just thinks it's a funny aspect that, like, you know, he never really gives a serious answer on it. And I don't know. I don't know what people's thoughts are on it much. And I can't even tell you what my, yeah, because I had thoughts on it too. Like, as I was reading the series, I was like, I was in denial. I'll just say that. I was in denial. That's all right. I'm going to say. And so as it plays out, I'm interested to see what Matt thinks about this dynamic, because when Min sees something, it just comes true. It is written. It's the pattern pulling pieces together, three aspects. You know, there was this, I think Robert Jordan was pulling from three aspects of mythology around a chosen one, you know, one for wisdom, a warrior, royalty, things like that. So each of them kind of representing different aspects of high fantasy or whatever. And they're kind of those type of advisors, individuals, people around your chosen like character. Yeah. So,
yeah. So I guess, you know, in trying to think about it a little bit here. So like Luce Theron in the prologue is like, you know, he's like beside himself, right, of what happens to Eliana, right? But then there's also a little bit of talk of, you know, Luce Theron might have had some feelings for Lanfear. Certainly Lanfear seemed to love him.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess I'm wondering, is there a third? Is this something common to the dragon? Or is this just, Rand's thing and it's different?
I can't necessarily answer it. One, because you only have later. Two examples, though, too. You also just have the dragon and then the dragon reborn.
Right.
And you're right that he does have someone who is interested in him in Lanfear, but we never really see that those in the Age of Legends that those were feelings that were shared, I guess, between both parties.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah, I guess I can kind of say that there really was, as far as I know, there wasn't a third lover. I guess that's okay to say that Luce Theron, I don't believe, had one.
So then this is something that is, I guess, sort of unique to Rand.
Yeah, and I guess you can't even say, I mean, all we know is that Eliana is the one, is someone that he loves, is his true love, right?
Because there could be more revealed with Lanfear later, but as far as I've seen, it seems, yes, I don't know that. There's nothing that says that he was like with both of them or.
Oh, at the same time? No way. Yeah, yeah.
Because so it seems like really it was just him and Eliana, and then Lanfear just liked him, you know, just like how, you know, everybody likes Rand.
Everybody likes Rand. That's the opposite of another podcast that's out there. Just funny.
Oh, everybody hates. Yeah. But I mean, geez, Bear Lane. My God, man. It's just interesting to, I guess, kind of compare the two because it's different.
Yeah. Okay. So, at some point, I believe. So what Lanfear has told us essentially is that she and Luce Theron were lover. You know, like they were together, lovers.
She's made it seem like that, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's true.
Right, and we're gonna keep getting tidbits about it and so on. And if there's one specific line that people can. Send us in a pigeon. By the way, we have a great pigeon at the end of the show. That'd be cool just to kind of find that line where she talks about their relationship. I'll have to kind of go through the pieces together. But just real quick, so it is hinted at in the wiki anyways, and which I think has already been covered, that there is some type of romance between them. There is a connection between them, but then something happens, right? Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't mean that they could have sort of, you know, been together before. He meets Eliana.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So,
but this all makes, I mean, but this is, I mean, they're talking about sharing him. So, I mean, this makes it seem like, oh no, it's going to be
right.
You know, like we will all love him, but he's just going to do it whatever he wants.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This is different. This is different.
So, is Rand Land in Utah or like, I mean, what do we, you know?
Well, I think Rafe Judkins actually even talked about this in the show. Not that they would be. How did he put it? Yeah. What's the, I don't even. I'm gonna search the words here real quick. But that it's not their. Well, I can't say anything. I can't say anything because
right.
because it's spoiler.
You don't. Yeah.
But we know that there's men seeing these viewings. I mean, it's pretty obvious. If you're at this point, you kind of know that these are. Three sort of love interest for like we've seen men there with him and Lanfear saying take care of him while I you know go about my business. Elaine and him have been making out doing their thing, and he and Avienda literally just got naked and hooked up in a tent. Okay,
right.
So, I mean, he's actually done stuff with Elaine and Avienda, and not necessarily men, but he thinks about men and has an affection for her. Right.
Right.
So, it's come on. I mean. No one else has done this. I mean, Nynaeve is, I mean, Matt, I guess Matt's been kind of, you know, rolling from village to village and, you know, he's whatever, but kind of, I guess really it's just with the Aiel right now. So yeah, we'll leave that. But Ben Perrin and Faile, you just have, you know, right. He meets Faile, he's with her. And then we know Nynaeve is kind of interested in Lan, right? She's thinking about him. You throw Vale and Luca in there. And then Egwene, they settled that whole thing between her and Elaine where she's like, he's just a brother. He's like a brother to me. Have fun. Good luck.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that scene in the trailer makes it seem like there might be something going on.
Yeah, it does. It's different.
Yeah.
Like way more going on, possibly. So, and they were like engaged or promised to each other. And you remember when they go through the Tiran Grial, or they go through Rand has his many lives and many visions that he sees, and it's like he grows up and he's with Egwene. Egwene is his love. It was like that was his path. That's what he time and time again he was with her and growing old and didn't leave the Two Rivers and channeled and became mad and all that different stuff in the world of what if or the world of possibilities. That's what we kept seeing. So yeah, there's definitely something there between those two, and you know, great love and respect.
Okay, all right, well, let's move over to the final chapter today. Chapter 51. This could be a big one. News comes to Kyrian. So I think before that, Ez, this would be a good place to take a quick break for a message from our sponsor. Okay, as let's dive back in here and hit up the final chapter, chapter 51. News comes to Kyrian. My man, as been telling me, said just wait till you get to the end of this book. Things are gonna heat up. And you know, let's just say there seems like heaven, it's got some fires in it.
Some fires, man. They're in the Sun Palace right now, and things are starting to heat up, right? So that's hilarious. Yeah.
I mean, it's not as funny of a pun as the shadow literally is rising, but right, you know, it's okay.
It's okay.
Each book, I'm going to try to make puns. We're literally at a crossroads of
wow. We haven't got
it. It is quite literally a path of daggers. Here we go. So Rand is taking a break from the endless meetings in a dried up garden of the Sun Palace. He hasn't managed to escape the company of Lady Salande, though. The latest pretty young woman, Lady Colivere, has been trying to get into his bed since he arrived in Kyrian 10 days ago. Rand is getting very tired of the everlasting game of houses being played in Kyrian. He sends Salande off with talk of the male half of the source. Deciding that this is no better than waiting inside, Rand returns to his company. A number of Kyrian and Tyrian lords and ladies are awaiting him, all plotting to take over the throne or carve out their own kingdoms as soon as his back is turned. He has received news that Berelain, the first of man, is coming to Kyrian. Maybe he should put her in charge here so he can move against Samael and Ilion. He makes sure that the Tyrian lords know he is aware of their attempts to keep their soldiers in Kyrian and that he expects them to be on the move as he ordered. He also invites Lady Colvere to a private dinner tonight to stop her from sending any more women to him. He doesn't want Avienda to repeat what she had done to the one she caught. Then he dismisses the party. After they have left, Moraine, Egwene, and Avienda come to see him. Rand is still upset with Egwene's refusal to give him more information about the mysterious Aes Sedai that may come to his aid. Moraine hands him two letters, both with the seal of Tar Valon on them. The first is from the new Ammerlin Eliida, telling him there is a delegation on its way to take him back to Tar Valon so the tower can see his safety until Tarmon Gaiden. The second is from Eliida's keeper, Alvarin. It's a lot more polite than Eliida and a warning of sorts. Rand lets the women read both letters, even though Alvarin tells him not to let anyone, even Moraine, see hers. They discuss the content. It's obvious Tar Valon has spies in Kyrian, and there seems to be a division in the tower Eliida may be unaware of. Right now, there is not a whole lot Rand can do about it, though, except for keeping Elida's delegation at a safe distance. The Aiel guard announced Matt has arrived to see Rand. He asks the women to stay. It might unbalance Matt enough to get him to do what Rand wants of him. Moraine asks Matt about his military activities over the past few days. Matt has been involved in a number of battles with Andorans who have moved into the west of Kyrian. He and his band of the Red Hand emerge victorious. She wonders if Matt finds battles or if the battles find Matt. Matt feels attacked by this, but the conversation turns into another direction when he reveals he has news that concerns Elaine. Matt thinks Morgaze, the Queen of Andor, is dead. The rumors among the Andorans point in the direction, at least. Gabriel is King of Andor now, the first in the existence of the nation. Rand is furious about this news. He waited too long to remove Robin, and now Elaine's mother is dead. Will we ever forgive him for that? At least he can still avenge her death. Rand is ready to leave for Caemlyn now. To his surprise, Moraine doesn't try to stop him. She just tells him to do it tomorrow. Rand sees she is all right. After some discussion, he will allow the three women to accompany him, who will say only that Robin will be in Caemlyn after all. When that is decided, he asks the woman to leave. Matt stays behind, and Rand starts making it very clear he needs Matt's newfound military knowledge, and now Matt is going to use it.
Morgaze is dead. She's dead, my friend. It's crazy. You know? Robin killed
her. Yes. Yes. But they almost, at first I was like, at first, I don't know. I was like, did we just get another major death off screen? But then they almost immediately say, well, there's no proof of the body. So it immediately to me was like, all right, well, she's still alive. So she's like on the run or something.
Right.
It's almost immediately like they set it up like, well, she might not be.
Right. And we did have that chapter, and refresh me if I'm wrong on this, but we had that chapter where she was rolling down to, she was being under Ravine's kind of control, whatever. And was losing track of time and memories and stuff like that, and then seeks out Talonvar, I think his name, Talonvor, and he's trying to help her a little bit. So we go to Basil Gill, Master Gill is there from the Queen's blessing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
So a lot of big stuff happening here. I mean, just going back over this section of it. First of all, hey, we're throwing more ladies at Rand. All right, Lady Colavere, just again, same thing with the Aiel. Everyone's trying to get Rand because he's becoming a powerful guy, right? Then we have influence, we have power over all of this.
Well, Berylaine's brought up. Remember Berylaine back in Tyr? She went in there and he used the power to scare her away, and he does it here again. Scares a high lady away. Yeah.
Right. We hear that Berylaine's coming. He's thinking about putting her in charge so he can move against Samael and Ilion.
Yep.
Rand does not like to wait. Okay, let's go. It's time.
Right now. Exactly. And he's thinking about Samael, right? And he's plotting for all of that. He's been attacked by him. All of these things. It's actually Matt fighting those border wars with Andor that he learns about Morgaze, the rumor that she's dead or been killed. And that Lord Gabriel is in charge now. And here we go. So that's what changes and alters his plans. Moraine does not argue with him at all. Just says you should do it tomorrow. Get your plans, get everything in order, and then go, you know, do your thing, right? I mean, so she's, and then we learn that the women channelers will go with him. She, Egwene, and Avienda.
Right. And Rand's getting a letter here saying, hey, we're going to take you back so we can hold you at the tower.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
What's their plan? We'll just tell him, hey, we have to keep you safe so that you can come be here for the final battle. And it's like, first of all, it's a pretty awful plan. I'm not going to lie. Because for starters, unless your plan is to bring this guy here, I mean, obviously it seems like, hey, they want to bring him there, probably gentle him because they don't think he's the real deal because whatever.
Yeah.
But even regardless of that, it kind of reminds me as a little bit in Star Wars of Anakin Skywalker. It's like, hold on a second.
Yeah.
You're telling me that you have you found the most powerful person ever. Mm-hmm. And your plan is to that person to build experience and train in the right way.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. You obviously don't want Rand to die before the final battle. But at the same time, what if you're just gonna when the final battle starts, okay, get out there, and then they don't know what to do.
He doesn't know what to do. Yeah, exactly. And one of the things he realizes as well is he has Osmodian. Lanfear realizes this. Like, he needs trained. He's untrained. Yeah. There are no male channelers. They're being gentled like one by one as they come up. This is, you know, Tom's nephew. Is one of them that's talked about earlier in the series. And you have Loghain and these others who, when it's found out that they can channel, boom, we're sending a delegation to deal with you. Well, they're sending another delegation right now to deal with Rand. Now, what's interesting about this is the two letters. Alvieran has sent a letter. You know, she's second kind of in command, if you will, or whatever, speaker. And she is sending a letter. And then Elida is sending a letter, too. Which one do you believe? Did they do that together? You go back to the conversation that you had at the end. It was a prologue or when this was. But when Elida is basically being questioned and not seen as being almost like a puppet of the other sitters who have put her up to be the Amyrlin. And she's not really well respected. And Alvieran is kind of, you know, doing her own thing. And then Alvieran has that encounter with Padon Fain. Remember that? Padon Fain was caught stealing the dagger. And she lets him go. So yeah. What's up with that? Keep an eye on Alvieran.
They have no plan. They have no plan. Okay, here we go. So we'll move on here. So Egwene has a little point of view here. So when the three women are outside, Moraine tells Egwene to be careful. Rand will need her to tell him what he needs to hear. He will need people who will not be as silent when he gets angry. Egwene says Moraine is there to do that, but the Aes Sedai insists she be careful and leaves them. Egwene asks Avienda to accompany her to dinner, but she has other duties. There's nothing to it but to find a meal for herself. So that's just sort of, that's just a quick little point of view. Then we switch back to Matt here. Matt returns to his chambers after his stormy meeting with Rand. He is still playing with the thought of leaving the band behind and making a run for it. Melindra enters his room while he is gathering his things. He tells her he is going away for a while, going away for Rand for a while. Melindra seems to think he still isn't free of Rand's shadow. Matt lets it slip that Rand is going to Camelot, something he was not supposed to do. While he tries to cover up for his mistake, Melindra attacks him. Matt draws out one of his knives and kills her. Before she dies, she says he has the great lord's own luck. He's never killed a woman before, and it upsets him a great deal. In her hand, he finds a dagger with 9 bees of Ilion on them. Ilion, where Samael rules. There can be no doubt that she was a dark friend. The Forsaken have definitely noticed him. Matt feels the dice spinning in his head. And the summary here doesn't do close enough to describing sort of the drama that's going on in that scene. So it was a really great scene. And it was heartbreaking, man. Talks about how he liked her and
right.
You know, he feels like terrible, but it's just sort of like, you know, in the moment, like, oh, why did you do that? Why did you?
Yeah. So here's the thing.
I mean,
so
she's almost like Ingtar a little bit, as it fell to the darkness.
Yeah, fell to the dark.
Gosh,
God, dang it! Another
dang
one.
It.
Another one lost. I know. She's very playful and you know she shows interest in Matt right after Rudion, and he offers her a necklace. They become romantically involved, and then you know we find out some stuff about her story arc is still yet to be revealed. I think there's a few things involving another individual who's out there. So anyways, I'll kind of leave that there. But yeah, she tries to kill Matt and he has to kill her. So that sucks, right? I mean it's and now this is further signs that Samael is after not only Rand, but then that Matt has gotten their interest, right? That the Forsaken now know about Rand and his friends, and they're on the list, if you will. So
and that's the end of the chapter for today, chapters for today. But yeah, so I mean big sort of takeaways. Again, the pieces are moving as we get set up here for the final confrontation is going to be here in the Fires of Heaven. I mean, now it seems like Morgaze is certainly, whether she's dead or not, is certainly disposed. So that Andor is now up for grabs. Samael is moving against Rand.
Well, let me I think I can reveal this now. I'm trying to read ahead here real quick. One more interesting fact on this last little bit here with Matt. So it is not, I'm just trying to find it, and friends who have read the series multiple times more than I, if you know more about this, please let me know. Please send us a pigeon and we will correct it. We always do corrections and try to amend things as we go. But Melindra is, so we find out she's a dark friend. She's attacking Matt. And let's see. She's a dark friend who was in the employ of Samael, proven by the knife which she tried to kill Matt with, a knife with a jade hilt and 9 golden bees, the sign of Ilion, Samael's domain. Now, the note here is that she doesn't make this attack. She doesn't attack Matt until he mentions Camelin, and that perhaps her orders were, if ever there's a suspicion or there's this, you know, get close to Matt, and if ever he tries to come to Camelin, kill him. Or if Rand comes to Camelin, kill Matt, someone close to him. So people believe, and I don't know if it's confirmed anywhere or not, I'd have to go look, that someone else, not Samael, because, you know, the Dark Friends work for, like, they swear their oaths, and then now that the Forsaken are out, they're collecting the Dark Friends, and Dark Friend socials are happening and whatnot. So it's believed that maybe she was actually working for Ravine, which is cool. I've never really looked at it that closely, but just a little interesting note that it's the dagger. Using that type of dagger makes them believe that it's Samael, but really she could have been working for Ravine. It just shows you the plotting that would go on, or the thought that would go into it from the Forsaken's point of view. So,
wow. I just got a message here from Jeremy, my brother Jeremy, our Aiel chief clan. I know as we're about to move into pigeons. He sent me the shot in the trailer where the arrows are flying.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And if you zoom in, you see Lan is standing right in front of Nynaeve.
Okay. Okay.
And then you've got the red Aja there. You've got blue. You got like 2 blue Aja, and then everyone else, including Nynaeve, is wearing green.
Yeah.
What's going on in this trailer, Ez?
What is going on in this trailer? It is something I've wanted to go.
I think it's just coincidence, because people were talking about that. They said Nynaeve is wearing green in the trailer. Well, she hasn't chosen an Aja where we're at yet. So
right, and here's the thing. So a lot of stuff to me, even when I was looking at it, when you throw in this whole low gain stuff, like, are they gonna? Hey, who is shooting those arrows at them? And
right.
When, you know, I have to go look at that, a couple of different other Aes Sedai to see who's mixed in with this group and when and where they are at. Because, like Rafe said, he's pulling stuff from book 2 and even book 3 and shuffling pieces around.
Is Nynaeve, by the end of season 1, is Nynaeve going to be like an Aes Sedai? I mean, she's in book 5 and she's still just accepted.
I know. Well, and here's the thing.
She's not accepted, but she's what's the term they give her? Hers is different, right?
Well, no. So you have novices and then you have the accepted.
Right.
Yeah. So she's that second level. So when she first gets
that's right. But she starts out as an accepted. Because she had already sort of like.
She's wilder. She's learned on her own. Yeah.
That's what I meant. That's what I meant. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So now here's the thing, though.
What are the other ranks?
So you just have novice, accepted, and then Aes Sedai.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And so the other two start off as novices. Egwene starts off as a novice, and then Elaine is a novice. But they then will get the rank. They'll quickly move up. You know,
right.
You can tell. So here's my thing, though. At the beginning of that trailer, Egwene is pushed off a cliff by Nynaeve. And I don't think it's like going into the water after Shadar Logoth or something like that. I don't think it's like.
That's how it starts.
Yeah, and it's like
that might be the opening scene of the whole thing.
Is this like wisdom?
First of all, training? If it's the opening scene of the whole thing, I'm going to be upset. It needs to start with Rand and Tam in out in the woods
on their way
on the road. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you could totally start like that and then cut to a scene where the first time we see those two together, that is happening, right. And then we're trying to figure that out. But yeah, I get you. I totally get you.
You got to start the same way.
Me personally, I want to see a prologue where in which Luz Theron freaking steps out. And just, I know we're not, but it would be.
Well, Lord of the Rings does start that way.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
And then we cut to the Shire.
And you don't, you have no idea what it's about. You're like, wait, what? You have no clue what that's about. And you're like, this is 1,000, 3,000 years ago. Who cares? Right. I mean, right. It just, you're trying to figure it out. So, but to me, I still wonder what is going on. Why is she push her off a cliff? And, you know, is that wisdom training? Is it something else?
I don't know. Maybe she's trying to become a wisdom. All right. Yeah. What's our pigeon today, Ez?
Yeah. So, okay. We have a pigeon here. Pretty cool, from Joe. Just after the trailer. Hey guys, happy trailer day. Wow, that was awesome. And I can't agree more. It was epic. If you guys haven't had a chance, go check out my reaction over on YouTube. And thanks everybody who did subscribe, by the way, after that. Really, really pumped about it. So I started the book series in February and discovered your podcast around the same time and have been tuning in as I got through each block of chapters. I have fond memories of shoveling snow while listening to the Eye of the World episodes. I always enjoy hearing your commentary. It's a great it's a great concept, having one person who's read the series and one person who's a first-time reader. That works really well. I recently caught up to where you are in the series, and while I'll miss having the next podcast ready to go as soon as I get there, I definitely still plan on tuning in as the episodes come out. I'm loving the book series, and I'm ecstatic about the show. I've been telling everyone I know about it. I was surprised to find out my aunt has already read through the entire series twice. Wow. And I recently convinced a coworker, possibly a second, to start reading the books. Can't wait to hear your take on the end of The Fires of Heaven. It gets epic. Also, regarding when to read the prequel, I took Daniel Green's advice to read it after book 5, and that made total sense to me, and I'll second that recommendation. Diving into book 6 now. Wait, the prologue is 74 pages long. Jeez. That will definitely have to be its own podcast episode. Wow. There we go. So that's Joe. Thanks, Joe. Awesome. Awesome stuff. So we have a recommendation to dive into a new spring or whatever. And maybe now I'll go, cause I can kind of cover that in my own, just, reading, just you know, read that on a weekend and get through it. I've read the graphic novel and then done a bunch of looking into the Wikipedia page or Wikipedia. I keep saying that. Wikipedia. I cover Star Wars too much and I'm always saying it. Anyway, but I've read most of the notes on it and it's an interesting story. Oh shoot. Did you look something up?
You're not supposed to look. Prologue. He's not lying.
70 some pages.
It's almost 3 hours.
3 hour
on prologue. Audible. Yeah. It's 3 hours. It's 3 hours.
Robert Jordan ain't messing around, Audible. Man. He's not messing around. He has a story to tell. Gosh dang it, by the light, wow. And he will tell it. Okay. So it's crazy.
It's a 3 hour chapter.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's a 3 hour tour, man. You know? Yeah. I know somebody else who did a 3 hour tour and they never came back. Okay, so
yeah.
Gilligan's Island, man, a 3 hour tour.
Oh my god, I didn't come on, get man. The reference. I used to watch that show all the time. Holy cow,
they went out for a 3 hour tour and they never came back. They never
came back. We're not, well, hopefully, that's not like, yeah, hopefully, we do come back from the prologue in the next book, but no, right. that is cool and awesome to hear that people are enjoying the podcast. One, that's great. I love to hear that people are enjoying it and that you picked up the series and you're reading it. Man, I have fond memories reading this series, and I think back to times where, Matt, one night, I don't know if you remember this, quick story here. We were playing Destiny, right? We were playing Destiny. This is back in the day, back at your dad's house. And you were playing it, and I was just watching, and I had headphones in. I was listening to this series, and I remember it was like, then you went to bed, and I just, you know, I was my turn to play. I just stayed right. up and was yeah. playing, right? And Matt's like, I'm gonna pass out. But I was listening. I on summer break as a teacher, staying up super late, and I started playing Destiny, no audio on, listening to the audiobook, and I remember the sun started rising. And I was like, I've been listening for like 6 hours, playing 6 hours of Destiny. And I said, well, McDonald's is open. And I went and got some freaking pancakes and a big breakfast. And I kept right on. And that was one of my, I remember sitting in the drive-thru at McDonald's, just so such a nerd, right? And I was like, I'm with my friends, right? Rand, Matt, Perrin, in the drive-thru. Picking up some hotcakes and some syrup. It's so ridiculous. So anyways, I have fond memories as well of reading the series back in the day.
That's great. That's great. So yeah. So hey guys, yeah, shoot us emails at here the Horn of Valir, right? Mm-hmm. No, wait.
Yeah,
the Horn of Valir on Twitter at gmail.com.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. I always think it's Heroes of the Horn at gmail.com, but it's not. It's right. The Horn of Valir. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was Heroes of the Horn. It was taken, apparently.
Yeah.
By who?
By who? Who's I have no. It? Who's holding that?
By the light.
By
who's
the.
I got that.
Heads will roll if I ever. I'm just kidding.
Who's got it? I want it. So, anywho, guys. Yeah. So, shoot us emails at hornofthevalier@gmail.com or on Twitter, Facebook. We have a Facebook group. You can leave us comments. Check out our YouTube page. And we'll do our best to talk about anything you guys want us to talk about. Over on our Game of Thrones podcast, somebody said, hey, could you guys just talk about this character? Mm-hmm. We did like 2 hours yesterday.
Yes.
On just one character. So
it was awesome.
We'll absolutely make YouTube videos and put in segments of the show, even if it's just like, hey, like, I just want to hear your guys' thoughts so far on a certain character.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Also, after this, we're going to follow up with the extended edition. And then after that, I will have the spoiler edition out there as well for some characters that were covered today. The way I'm kind of doing this is as we encounter characters and I scratch my head and say, what happened in their arc? Where have we seen them before? And then where are they going? So that is, again, total spoiler, all the way to A Memory of Light, just depending on how far I want to go or where I get to. So those are just off the cuff, again, informal. If you have somebody you want me to talk about, let me know. Cause while the mic is hot, I just roll with it and just keep talking. Cause it's nice when the names, the locations are fresh in my mind and I'm bouncing between literally a galaxy far, far away. And we also do Game
Westeros
of Thrones and then
Randland.
Yeah. And sometimes I'm in the Shire. It's freaking crazy. So
it's crazy. It's great.
It's great. I love it. But it's just like, yeah, it's a lot.
Absolutely. So, all right, guys. Well, hey, with that, we want to thank you for answering the call. In our next episode, we will be discussing Fires of Heaven chapters 52 through 56, which is the end of the book.
Awesome. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us that message/pigeon at thehornofvalir@gmail.com.
We will see you soon. And remember that the grave is no bar to our call.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by
buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video, find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.